Well, we're live. We're all still alive, I suppose. No one died today, hopefully. Hopefully no one passed away when that extra point went outside the goalposts. I hope you've had a little bit of time to relax in the last hour or so since that game ended. I hope you got your cold one. I got one. And another one in case that one ends. Because this is a two-beer podcast here, folks. You know, someone said to me earlier today, a wise person said, you know, the worst days will end and the best days will end. Remember that. And I think that's important to remember because sometimes you'll think you're in the worst days and sometimes you'll think you're in the best days. And what you'll ultimately find over the passing of time, eventually, when you get to it, you will notice that there's a space in between the best days and the worst days. And those are just the average days, the neutral days where you don't really feel too strongly one way or the other. And when you have a game like this, when you have a one-point loss, and it follows the previous week's one-point loss, and it follows the previous week's, you know, whatever was, three-point win, which followed the previous week's three-point win, which followed the previous season's losses that certainly felt like losses, and wins that at some points felt like losses because they were near losses. And it starts to add up, and it adds up, and it piles up, and it piles up. You start to run into apathy. And that's, you know, maybe I'm too far ahead of myself here. Maybe this is something we should talk about on the Tuesday night podcast when we've had a few days and we're, you know, sort of taking the bigger picture view. I mean, we just watched a football game, right? We all sat here and watched a game. There's plenty to talk about. 60 minutes of football plus two overtimes. One overtime, I guess it is. And there's plenty of very specific football to talk about. And maybe we take the broader view in a couple days when we've had a chance to sit back and think about things a little bit and try to have some perspective. But the worst thing that can happen for Pitt football, always the worst thing that can happen for Pitt football, and this applies in so many ways to this football program and really the University of Pittsburgh athletics as a whole, the athletic department, the Department of Athletics, as it were, since for some reason they decided to switch the two words around and instead of calling themselves the athletic department, they're the Department of Athletics. The worst thing that can happen for Pitt sports is apathy. Because what do we always talk about with Pitt? We talk about being in this city, a pro sports city with three major pro sports teams, successful, not always successful, but three pro sports franchises with significant success in their histories, enough success in their histories to have built up a strong base of support and strong interest. And if Pitt wants to find itself in the heart of the sports discussion in this city, and not just as the butt of a joke, it needs to be relevant. It needs to avoid apathy at all costs. People have to give a damn about this football program. And when you go back-to-back weeks of losing one loss, one-point games, when you can't beat teams like Boston College and NC State, who aren't, they're not as bad as I might have thought they were before the season, but they're not world beaters. They're not going to be ranked in the top 10 next week. And when you can't beat those teams, and the reason you lose to those teams is the same reason you lost to the five teams you lost to last year, and the seven teams you lost to the year before that, and the seven teams you lost to the year before that, and the five teams you lost to the year before that, and the five before that, and the seven before that, and the six before that, and the seven before that, how far do we have to get before it's a number smaller than five? And when you keep losing the same way for the same, well, I shouldn't say the same way because golly gee, they found a new way to do it this week, didn't they? But when you keep losing over and over again, and it feels like you're watching the same story, not in a same old Pitt kind of way, because get out of here with that trash. I hate hearing that. Don't talk about pitting, you unoriginal so-and-sos. You know, people were talking about Clemsoning for a couple of years, and Pitt eventually thought, oh, we should use that to describe, not Pitt, but Pitt fans thought, we should use that to describe our bad losses. We're pitting. No, you're not pitting. You're just mediocre. and you were mediocre in 2012 and 2013 and 2014. You were mediocre when you fumbled six times on the first six possessions against Georgia Tech, or when Kevin Harper missed a field goal that could have beat Notre Dame. You were mediocre time after time after time. You weren't good enough to rise above and be a little bit better than mediocre. And that's why you stayed irrelevant in this city. Or I shouldn't say irrelevant, because there's always going to be a fan base in this city for Pitt. But to truly be relevant, you have to achieve at a higher level. And you could go back to 2003, when Pitt was top 10 preseason, before the season, you know, in the rankings. And they had Larry Fitzgerald, and there was a lot of excitement and hype. And you know what happened. Or you could go back to 2008. We don't want to skip over that one, right? When they came off the 13-9 win, they had LeSean McCoy back, and they went out, and you know what happened. And in 2009, when they got themselves into the top 15, into the top 12, and you know what happened, and you know what happened, and you know what happened. And I can go through year by year, and I can cite example by example and say, and you know what happened. And what happened wasn't just when Pitt has a chance to, you know, succeed or really take the next step. Stop talking about the next step, Pitt fans. Stop talking about getting over the hump. Because it's not about that. It's not some mythical mountain you can climb. You just have to avoid mediocrity for a while. You have to be a good, competent football team and good, competent football program that does not shoot yourself in the foot over and over and over again. And maybe that's taking the next step. Maybe taking the next step is the modest goal of not, you know, suffering self-inflicted wounds. Is that really the goal? Is that the next step? Is that getting over the hump that you're just not going to shoot yourself in the foot? Seems like you could aim a little higher than that. But you're not going to achieve that relevancy locally if you don't. You're not going to achieve that locally if you don't stop having games like this, and games like last week, and games like Eastern Michigan, even though they won, and games like Boston College last year, and games like Miami last year. You're not going to get the attention that you want if you're Pitt, if you don't stop having those games. And what really, here's where it gets exciting. Now, I mean, go look at the vocal Pitt fans on Twitter, on the message boards, on Facebook. They're angry. And there's a lot of anger out there, and there's a lot of drinking going on. But the apathy is starting to creep in. And that's the problem. And that's the risk you run when you can't get out of your own way in games like this. NC State and Boston College were never going to be pushovers. You were never going to just walk over those teams. But if you are where we thought you were as a program, if you are who we thought you were as a team, as a roster, as a coaching staff, if you are who we believed you were, you wouldn't lose these games. If you were who we believed you were, you wouldn't have been needed to squeak out wins over Syracuse and Louisville. But because you had to steal away with those victories against the Orange and the Cardinals, and because you had to, well, not because you had to, but because you did lose to NC State and Boston College by 1 point each in sort of equally infuriating fashion, we have a new idea of who you are. And it's unfortunate of who you appear to be. Because who you appear to be right now is, I don't even know if you would say an average football program. This team right now has so many issues, they'd hold it back on a week-to-week basis. And if they can't even rely on their defense to play well, which at least got them through the first two games of the ACC schedule this year, they got away with playing lousy offense because and questionable special teams in at least one of those two games. They got away with it because they had a really good defense, a defense playing at a very high level. Well, that defense isn't playing at a very high level right now. They are in spurts. Middle half of the NC State game, they played pretty well. Second half of this Boston College game, save for, really the second play of the half when they gave up a 77-yard touchdown pass. Oh, except for that, when they gave up a touchdown pass in overtime. Oh, except for that, when they allowed Boston College to at least drive to set up a 50-some-yard field goal, which, I mean, is not a terrible outcome, but they gave up the plays. I understand you're trying to keep, you know, Boston College in front of you. You don't want to give up a touchdown. You know, at worst, you want to force a long field goal, which is ultimately what they did. But this defense, if it's as good as it's supposed to be, doesn't give up those plays, doesn't give up 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns to NC State, doesn't lose this game, doesn't lose that game. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the defense lost those games, but they, unlike the Miami game last year, really unlike the Boston College game last year, they share a lot of blame in these two losses. And if you can't rely on that unit, and you know you can't rely on the offense that can't run the ball, the offense that is unreliable in the passing game, they show flashes, they show fits and spurts, and Kenny Pickett looks good a lot of the time, almost most of the time, but he can't rely on anybody to catch the ball. I mean, nobody. Last year, at least, we could circle in on Nakia Griffin-Stewart and Will Gregg and say, boy, those guys drop a lot of passes with the receivers a little bit. Now, who do you rely on in this passing game? And if you can't rely on the passing game and you know you can't run the ball, how the heck are you going to score points? And if you can't score points and your defense is not going to be reliable like you thought it was going to be, how are you going to win games? You can't even kick an extra point. It's sort of, you get those extremes with Alex Kessman right now, right? In this game, to go from a 58-yard field goal to force overtime to missing an extra point to end overtime. I said before I started this podcast, I don't really know what to say, and I kind of don't. I'm going to go to the comments here on the YouTube live stream because I'm sort of, you know, I don't want to say it's stream of consciousness right now, but I mean, what do you say after a game like this? You know, what do you say after a loss like this one, coming as it does a week after the NC State game, coming as it does after an 8-5 season that should have been 10-3, you know, coming as that did after a 7-7 season that should have been like maybe 9-5 or 10-4. Coming as that, well, 2017 was a pretty lousy season. That was a 5-7 season. They earned that one. But you've got the better part of 3 seasons, well, 2 full seasons and this third one now that you're in, and you've just got questionable results. And eventually it'll lead to apathy. And if the fans start to have apathy, start to be apathetic about this program, then you have real problems. Because if you're Pitt, you need to be relevant. And to make yourself relevant, I mean, as more than the butt of a joke, and to make yourself relevant, you can't have games like this. All right, I'm going to go to the YouTube comments because I know we're early in the podcast here. Josh Newark says, I expect to see the whiteboard. I'm not even getting out the whiteboard, Josh. You know, last week, I got out the whiteboard. First of all, and I had to apologize to my son. It's his whiteboard that he uses for school, and he was already in bed when I started the podcast. I did not ask him if I could use his whiteboard, so I apologized to him the next day. It was inappropriate for me to take the whiteboard without asking him. And this week, I didn't ask him, but I don't even want the whiteboard this week. Last week, I had the whiteboard to list all of the bad losses. Not all, but to list the bad losses from the last few years. I'm not even thinking in those terms anymore. It's not about bad losses. Because with bad losses, there's an implication that you are playing an inferior opponent and you should have won because you are superior to them. I don't know that this team is superior to its opponents. I don't look at the schedule and say Pitt is superior to an opponent because a superior team would not have lost back-to-back one-point games. A superior team would not have been in the situation. A superior team right now would not be 3-2. They would be 4-1 at worst, and ideally 5-0 if they were a truly superior team. But what we have seen, not just through the last 2 games, but through the last 4 games, is that they are a lot closer to the level of Syracuse and Louisville, maybe NC State and Boston College, although they clearly are below those two teams, and those two teams look better than Pitt thus far. They are in that bottom half. And I guess I could get the whiteboard and list the 14, 15 ACC teams and say, well, here's how Pitt fits. But did you watch that team today or watch that team last week and really the first two ACC games and say, boy, that's a top half of the conference team right there? I'm moving away from talking about bad losses, at least for today, because with bad losses, there's an implication of superiority, and they're not superior. They are not better than anybody else right now. And now that doesn't mean that I expect them to lose every game the rest of the way. Somebody tweeted that to me. They said, you know, Georgia Tech's looking better too. Pitt might not win another game. They're going to win more games. I mean, holy hell, can you imagine if they went 3-8? That's not going to happen. They will win more games. But I'm not going to sit here and talk about who they're superior to because they are not. They are on the level of all this other great middle / bottom middle of the conference. That's where they have put themselves. Five games into the season, we can say that about Pitt. Before the season, I would have said, yeah, you know what? They are one of the better teams in the conference. They have one of the best defenses in the conference. They have a veteran offense that should improve. That's what I said all summer long. That's what I said all spring long. That's what I maintained. And you may have been on board with that. You may have not been. I think there was a lot of evidence to back up my assertion that they were in that position. My evidence was the history of what they'd done and sort of the natural progression of players. Your evidence was just, well, they're just not that good, or that's just not what they do. I mean, I felt pretty confident that they would be better, that they would be a top half of the conference team, that they would be a top third of the conference team. They are not. They are not. Let's look here. Colin Towell says, if Narduzzi doesn't win six games, what's the chances Like pulls the plug on him? She has to think this program can be so much better than what it is. Also, I wonder how much COVID would be the factor. If COVID is a factor in any coaching decisions this year, it buys a stay of execution for coaches. And don't conflate this with me saying what I think is going to happen with Pat Narduzzi. Personally, I don't think he's going to get fired. And he's, not this year at least. I think he's got at least another year after this, if not more. I do think for a lot of schools that may be thinking about firing their coach, they're going to hesitate with COVID being a factor because they've all lost a lot of money this year. And it costs money to fire a coach. And if you've lost a bunch of money this year, are you really going to be itching to pay some buyout to get rid of the coach and then go hire a new coach that you're probably going to have to pay at least as much, if not more money to? I don't know if that's, I think that's going to be tough to stomach for a lot of boards of trustees and that kind of thing. So I don't see any change going on there. Dale Gribble says, I don't know who I should be mad at more, Jason Pinnock, the kicker, or Andre Powell. Well, I mean, there's a couple things there. You know, Jason Pinnock, yeah, I mean, he got beat. He got beat a bunch of times. And that's going to happen in this defensive scheme. We've seen it in the past with Pitt, previous years. We've seen Pitt, Pitt's corners get attacked. And you know what? It happened in Michigan State. If you go back and look at Michigan State's defense and what they did and how they did it, I mean, their corners got taken advantage of there too. Pinnock's the one. You know, they didn't seem to go after Marquez Williams quite as much. Maybe it's who, you know, Pinnock getting matched up on Zay Flowers a lot. But they went at him, and Pinnock didn't seem to be up to the challenge. And I expected more out of Jason Pinnock this year. I think he's been a little bit disappointing this season. I expected him to be really good and play like an NFL corner, and, you know, I don't think he has thus far. Alex Kessman, what can you say about Alex Kessman? He sends the game to overtime. He makes, an unearthly kick. He kicks 58 yards for a field goal to send the game to overtime. It's incredible. And he misses an extra point in addition to the two field goals he missed earlier in the game. I don't even know what you say about that. Andre Powell, the running backs coach, I mean, I just don't know what the issue is with Pitt's running game. I don't know if it's a poor scheme. I don't know if it's poor blocking. I don't know if the running backs just aren't good enough. I think there's talent in the running back group. I do. I think Vincent Davis, if he's got a hole to get through, he's fast. I think he can get in and really make plays. I thought his touchdown run was a pretty nifty move. And his run before that, too, after Kenny Pickett got hurt. And he, Joey Yellen came in Vincent Davis ran for 14 yards on a really nice run and then scored a touchdown with a really slick little run right there. And darn near when the ball was downed at the one or inside the one after that punt, he almost broke for a really big play. I think Vincent Davis has that kind of potential that he can make some big plays. I think Izzy Abanikanda is going to be really good in this defense or in this offense. I think he's going to be a good player. I didn't really see much of Daniel Carter. Got to see Todd Sibley. Guys, can we just take a second? Why? You go the whole game, and with first and 10 at the 14 in overtime, after the other team has scored a touchdown, you bring out the Wildcat. This is a moot point because they ultimately scored a touchdown, so it didn't keep them. But I mean, you had to have a quarterback sneak with a guy with a bum ankle on fourth and one from the five or the four or wherever it was, and on the same series where you went Wildcat on first down. Why are you bringing out the Wildcat in that situation? Why are you running an option? earlier in the game, I'm not going to even look up when that happened, but an option to the short side of the field. What is going on? I don't like to be the guy who questions. I personnel decisions. All right, coaches, they practice these guys every day. They have them in meetings every day. They see what these players can do. And if one guy's ready and another guy isn't, I expect them to put in this guy. The coaches sit down and look and say, who gives our team the best chance to win? So they play that guy. So they have access to a lot more information than I do. I don't like to be too critical of those kind of personnel decisions. It's the same thing sort of to some extent with play calling. I think play calling is a hard thing to criticize when you're sitting there watching a game like we are, right? We all just sat there and watched that game today. And it's hard for me to criticize play calling because we're just watching the game as it happened. There are 22 moving parts on every single play. And any one of those moving parts can be the reason that a play works or that it doesn't. And sometimes we criticize play calling after the fact. But I have to look it up now. Where is it? When was the sweep? No, I don't care. Or not the sweep, the option. When was the option play? I'm sorry. I feel like I want to know the exact situation. I forget. I wrote it down. Nah, who cares? It doesn't matter, right? Calling an option play to the short side of the field on a third down. What difference does it make? Yeah, like what? Where does that come from? And again, play calling coaches have spent a lot more of their time studying these things and planning these things than I have. And there's any number of reasons why a play will work or it won't work. But an option? Wildcat? I don't understand. I don't understand. What was I even talking about? I was talking about the running game. And I got sidetracked because they brought in Todd Sibley in overtime to run the Wildcat when they hadn't done it all game. They run an option play when they don't run option ever. It's like using a read option last week when they're down near the goal line. And they don't run read option that often. And that's the kind of play you have to rep a lot. You have to be very comfortable running it. You have to practice it all the time. And they don't practice it all the time. They probably practice it some of the time, but not as much as you need to practice it if you're going to run it effectively. I don't understand. The running game, though, it could be, there are a number of issues that could be plaguing the running game, right? Scheme. O-line talent. O-line development and coaching. Running back talent. Running back development and coaching. Basically five issues. And it's pretty much, it's Mark Whipple. It's Dave Borbély. It's the O-lineman. Or it's the running backs. And I feel like it's one of those things. Really, it's all of those things. But I think the backs are good enough. I think they're not superstars, but I think they are good enough that they can make plays if they have opportunities. But they're not getting any opportunities. Jake Cradle was out for this game Paterduzzi said he was banged up, quote, in a freak play, I believe is what he said after the game. So he was unable to play. So they go with Owen Drexel in his first start, first career start, really the first meaningful snaps of his career. Jimmy Morrissey played right guard basically for the first time in his career. And I can't say that the run blocking was noticeably worse than it has been any other time this season or last year. And they got a few plays out of it, you know. Abanacanda had a couple decent runs. Vincent Davis had a couple decent runs. And those guys both scored touchdowns. I mean, Abanacanda's touchdown was on a pass, but, you know, the run game, you just can't run right now. You can't run. It's not a viable weapon. Other teams are not threatened by it. Other teams aren't worried about it. Other teams aren't going to spend a whole lot of time trying to defend it. The way you lose to Pitt right now is if you let Kenny Pickett sit back and pick you apart. If you let Kenny Pickett sit back and take shots at your defense. That's how you lose to Pitt right now. So why you would even worry about the run is beyond me. And why you would ever have less than five guys rushing on every passing situation is also beyond me. I mean, Pitt's offense is entirely one-dimensional right now, as it has been all season, as it was last season. And yeah, I don't know why you would really focus on defending anything else. I would say if you're a Pitt opponent, you keep selling out to stop the pass and rush the passer and get after Pickett. Make Pitt prove that they can actually run the ball. Let's see. Roll down... scroll down the comments here on our YouTube. Patrick Brennan says, what is your take on the record don't lie? We say Pitt should be 9-3. At the same time, Pitt could have just as easily lost to Duke, UCF, or Eastern Michigan. Is Pitt a 7-5 team doing 7-5 things? I mean, Pitt has played like a 7-5 team for the past few seasons. Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of it. And you're right, Patrick. I mean, I can sit here and talk about how they should have beat Miami and Boston College last year and been 9-3, but they very easily could have lost to Duke, could have lost to Central Florida. You know, I mean, they needed a fourth quarter comeback against Delaware. They had plenty of games that were close that went the other way. But I guess the one difference, as I would say, is when I talk about how they should have beaten Boston College and Miami last year, I'm saying it as an indictment. You know what I mean? I'm not saying, boy, look how close this team is. I'm saying it as a, boy, look at the opportunities they missed. Look at the opportunities they blew, the chances they blew. And here we are again, 3-2, should be 5-0. But, Patrick, sort of your point, it could just as easily be 1-4. Because it's not like Syracuse and Louisville were that far behind this team. You keep playing close games. See, this is something else I've been talking about for a while. I keep saying this. Oh, if you keep playing close games, eventually it's going to catch up with you. And I'm right about that. I mean, and it's been proven in the last couple of weeks. They keep playing these close games. They're unable to put teams away, and they've lost them the last 2 weeks. They won them the first 2 weeks. They lost the last two. I'm becoming more and more convinced that I don't know if this team is capable of... Let me think of the right way to say this. It comes back actually to the bad losses and superiority thing. I don't think they're that much further ahead or that much better than some of the teams they're playing that you could look at it and say, boy, they need to avoid these close games. Because when we talk about how Pitt keeps playing itself into close games, we're sort of saying it in the context of, well, they're better than these other teams, but they let them hang around. Maybe they're not better than these other teams. They sure don't look like they're better than these other teams. They look pretty evenly matched with Boston College and in some areas outplayed by Boston College. They looked pretty evenly matched with NC State and in some areas outplayed by NC State. They looked pretty evenly matched with Louisville and Syracuse and in some areas outplayed by Louisville and Syracuse. And in some areas they outplayed each of those four teams. And they did it enough to beat Louisville and Syracuse, and they didn't do it enough to beat NC State and Boston College. They're not, right now, they're not better than those teams. And so while I spent all this time talking about how you keep letting teams hang around, it's going to come back and bite you. Right now, it doesn't seem like it's a choice that Pitt can make of whether or not they're going to let teams hang around. Let's see here. Pitt fan 30 years says, please, let's have a real conversation. Who are good head coach candidates? I'd take Matt Canada in a second. Heck, I'd take Mark Richt. Yeah, well, Mark Richt has such a good track record of late. I mean, he's definitely a hot target, hot commodity for coaching. And Matt Canada, too, man. I mean, like, teams were just beating down his door, you know? We're going to keep hearing Matt Canada's name, I know. Mark Richt, I don't think anybody's going to talk about Mark Richt, and they shouldn't talk about Mark Richt. I mean, why hasn't Matt Canada gotten a head coaching job? He was pretty good at NC State. He was obviously very good at Pitt. Kind of, you know, blew it at LSU. Had a chance at Maryland. I mean, he got a full-time audition for the gig and didn't get the job. I don't know. I don't think he's as much of a shoo-in as a great head coach as some people might believe. Scroll down here. Who else wants to say things? N. Rummy says, if I'm Kenny Pickett, Patrick Jones, or Rashad Weaver, I'm opting out tomorrow morning. Those guys aren't going to quit on their team. I don't believe those guys will quit on their teams. On their team. I think Kenny Pickett is a really tough player. And I think he's a team player. I think he's a leader and he wants to be a leader. And I don't think he's going to quit on his team. Same thing for Patrick Jones and Rashad Weaver. Those guys aren't going to quit on their teams. They're not opting out tomorrow. I assume it's Jeff Meyer says, we keep blaming Narduzzi. How about Taysier Mack catches the 2-point conversion and Alex Kessman makes an extra point? Players have to execute. They do. You're absolutely right, Jeff. And I'm not going to disagree with you. And Eric Bruno followed up and said, well, Jeff, that's on the coaches for not having them prepared. It's honestly a recurring theme. And this is the thing, Jeff. You know, yes, Taysier Mack should have caught that 2-point conversion. Yes, Alex Kessman should have made the extra point. And if he made one of the field goals, it wouldn't have mattered, right? All those things are true. There are instances in every game where the players need to execute better, where the players need to avoid a bad mistake. And if they do, the outcome of the game could go in a different direction. But here's the thing. When you see trends week to week to week, when you see, well, you know, we can go back and look at the games that they lost last year and find common themes and common trends. And we can look at the games that they've lost this year and find common themes and common trends. And you can look at the games that they won, close games that they won, and find common themes and common trends. Then it starts to become something sort of second level. You know, if the player execution is the first level, but you keep seeing those problems, you go to a second level and start asking questions about what sort of lies behind that. You know, because then it's like the procedure penalties last year, right? It was an execution issue for Nolan Alizio that he took like 7 or 8 false starts throughout the season and the rest of the offensive linemen. It was an execution issue last week against NC State when the defense had 5 offsides penalties in the first 4 4 possessions for NC State. It was execution issues last year when Pitt's, on offense, their total number of procedure penalties and drop passes and turnovers, it was like 100 and some. It worked out to like 8 per game. Those are execution issues. But when they keep happening week to week to week, the accountability goes higher than the players. You know, something's not clicking between the coaches and the players if you continue to have these things happen. And there's something to be said for the fact that you put yourself in a position where a missed extra point could lose the game, where a drop 2-point conversion could lose the game. If you're as good as I think you are, and if you're as good as I thought you were, then you should not be putting yourself in a position where you have to catch a 2-point conversion or you're going to lose. You should not be putting yourself in a position where you have to make a 58-yard field goal to go to overtime and then a missed extra point in overtime can cost you the game. Because the only conclusion I can draw then is that you're not as good as I think you are. And the only conclusion is that you're not as good as I thought you were. No, no. You pile one game after another. You pile one loss after another. You pile one issue after another. And you start seeing the same things. And you ask these questions. You know, you ask these questions. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. Let's see. Scroll down through the comments here. We'll get a few more questions in. We got a lot of you guys are very active tonight. I really appreciate it. We're not gonna have time to get to everything here. I got a lot of stuff to work on and write from the game during this podcast, or after this podcast, I should say. I do appreciate everybody who tuned in here. While you're here watching the live stream, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/pantherlaircom. You know, liking the stream is awesome. We, you know, I appreciate that. But subscribing to the YouTube channel is the key. That's we love that. That's how we know that people appreciate this stuff. And of course, we do the podcast every Tuesday night, just to talk about everything that's going on. We've got a lot to we'll have a lot to discuss on Tuesday. You know, I think this podcast here, after the game, this post-game reaction podcast, it's kind of like the drive home podcast that we do after games when I actually drive to the game. I'm, of course, not in Boston right now. I'm not in Massachusetts. I'm at home. Let me see. I'll get in the car and I'll just record a podcast, sort of an immediate reaction type of thing, a couple hours after the end of the game. And I will, just kind of spout off a little bit about the game. Well, this video podcast here, this live stream has taken the place of that. And it's been fun to get the reactions and the conversations and the discussions that we have here. I enjoy it. You know, Gary Landefeld asks, where do you see wins coming? I don't see any certain wins on the remaining schedule. Yeah, I agree about that, Gary. I agree that I don't think there are any certain wins. You definitely can't circle any games and say, boy, Pitt's going to win that game. I believe they will win games again, but it's going to be in tight fashion. It's going to be like the Duke game last year or the Eastern Michigan game last year. Every game they've played this year against FBS opponents has come right down to the wire. You know what I mean? It's been in question in the fourth quarter. I mean, really, outside of the Virginia Tech game last season, you have to go back to like the ACC championship game to find the last Pitt game that really wasn't up in the air in the fourth quarter. It's how they're playing. They're playing these close games, whether they choose to or not. And they're kind of splitting them. Because I think if you keep playing these close games, you keep having these games that come down to the wire that are close like this, you're going to win some, but if you win a bunch of them, it's going to balance out the other way. There's going to be a regression, and you're going to lose to sort of balance it out because they're 50-50 games. And that's what this team has been playing far too much over the last two seasons. Maybe three. Maybe more. All right. It's getting on. Like I say, we've got a lot to work on, to write about after this game. I appreciate everybody who came into the came in the live stream. I apologize if I didn't get to your questions. Listen, come in on Tuesday night, all right, 8:30 p.m. We always have our live stream podcast at youtube.com/pantherlaircom. Come out and we'll have a conversation then. Of course, go to the message boards at panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. They're real interesting right now. We'll have a lot of conversations there throughout the week talking about this talking about this team and this week and this game and how things move forward from here. I mean, it's another week, another game. I mean, you have to, they'll pick up the pieces. Jimmy Morrissey talked about after the game, talked about having a 24-hour grieving period is sort of their policy. And then they move on and, start focusing on the next week. I got to think that gets harder and harder week after week when you have these kinds of losses. But, it's what they have to do. They're five games in. They have six remaining. They can't let this sink their season, no matter how depressed they might feel. And they probably feel worse than you do, I would think, because they were actually out on the field and suffered through that loss. They didn't get to sit at home on the couch and have the cold ones like we did. But, you know, the season's not lost. It's just, you know, the goals of trying to get to the ACC championship game, that looks like that's out the window. Not really sure how I don't think that path exists anymore, unfortunately, for Pitt. But they can salvage the season. They have 6 games left. They can keep battling. I think they'll get wins out of these games. They'll be close, and they'll have to find ways to pull them out in the end. Don't miss an extra point, because all that stuff gets magnified when you play these games as close as they have been. So go to the website, panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. We'll have plenty of coverage from this game, plenty of things to talk about there on the message boards at panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. And, of course, we'll have, you know, lots to talk about, lots of coverage of football, basketball, and recruiting. PantherLair.com. Tuesday night, we'll be back here, youtube.com/PantherLairCom, to do our regular weekly podcast at 8:30. We talk for about an hour then. So if you know, we got a lot of viewers tonight, we appreciate that. If that's if you're new to the podcast, make sure you come out and check it out on Tuesday night at 8:30. We'll try to have a little more perspective on things by then, take a few days to think about it and come back with some new thoughts. But and remember, subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/PantherLairCom. We really appreciate that. So thanks again, everybody. You know, you made it through the day. You're still alive. The worst days will end. The best days will end. Remember that. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Hope you have a great start to the week, and we will talk to you Tuesday night. Thanks a lot, everybody.